I'll move on to data centers, and with that, Utility Director Hegerman will provide initial information on data centers based on questions submitted by the public.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Firstly, I'll just ask this question. I was going to kind of skim these questions a little bit, but go dive deeper into some. It's been in the packet. Is the assembly, this is going to be a long meeting today, is the assembly okay with that strategy? Is going to hit the high points in this, or would you like me to go over every question?
High points is good.
Good? Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Very good. Happy to provide some more information regarding the data center opportunity in Petersburg. We do have Mr. Mazzella and Mr. Anoka here. If there are any questions from the assembly that I can't answer through this FAQ document. But essentially, we, you know, Power and Light just wants to be as transparent as possible with what's coming to Petersburg. And the reason is that, you know, we're very aware that large-scale data centers are a very touchy subject across the country. And, you know, they use an enormous amount of power. They use other resources. They take up land. They emit diesel fumes from generators that are running all the time. They're noisy. There's lots of very good reasons to be opposed to large-scale data centers. This project is not that, is not a large-scale data center. It is small. And just the basic method of operation is enormously different from the hyperscale data centers that exist and are getting so much pushback across the country. So there were some questions, just general questions about the data center itself. Of course, it's going to be located at Mr. Mazzella's property, the old Ocean Beauty Cannery. They're fine-tuning the final location for that. It's going to need about 1,500 to 2,000 square feet of space, which is about 2 to 3% of his facility. So still lots of room down there for him to plan other projects for his property. The borough is going to be providing power to this through an existing transformer. Other utilities may be needed, but in very small amounts, akin to a small residence, actually, if even they need a restroom in the facility. So water and sewer resources won't be taxed at all by this. The water system, they're going to charge a closed-loop radiator system to cool the servers in the heat of the summer. And when I say heat of the summer, we're talking Petersburg summer, right? So there's not a whole lot of cooling needed. Generally, we don't get high temperatures. So very little water resource used for this. Noise seems to be the one issue that is probably most applicable to this Petersburg opportunity. But the research we've done and the discussions we've had with Mr. Anoka pretty much tell us that should be a non-issue as well. If you're standing inside of the data center building and one of the server cabinets is open, you might get 80 decibels of sound. But nobody's going to be standing right next there with the cabinet open. You close the cabinet, and you step outside, and the sound level is closer to 60 decibels or less. And that includes any of the fan cool radiator for the water cooling system, which will be outside. So that amount of sound is, I think, a much better impact or a lesser impact to the community than the five freezer vans that were there, you know, all summer long in the past. The look of the building, Mr. Mazzella has told me that it'll be more akin to a net shed look. He wants it to blend into the community. He doesn't want it to be an eyesore. It won't be a big gaudy thing, you know. Anybody walking by won't know that it's a data center. It was a question about, you know, because we compared the data center to cannery operations, you know, how loud is a cannery? And while I don't have any decibel numbers for that, just the list of equipment that exists at a seafood processing cannery, refrigeration equipment, compressors and condensers, forklifts, cranes, you know, there are a lot of sound creating equipment at a cannery, and this particular data center, being small scale inside of a building, is not even comparable to what a cannery can put out in terms of sound. Any health concerns with data centers? You know, on the hyperscale version, yeah, there are health concerns, usually related to diesel generators that are running constantly to provide power to those. There's not going to be a diesel generator running at this facility. No emissions. Back to the noise. Noise is an issue with large scale data centers. Won't be an issue with this one. Radio frequency hazards, a lot of local concern about that related to the tower issue. Not an issue with this data center. There's no radio frequency emissions from this facility. And as far as the research that we have done and in our conversations with Mr. Anoka, there are no other health concerns other than those ones that are very, very minimal in this size of data center. Question about, will they be able to increase their power consumption? And, you know, nothing prevents any customer from coming to Power and Light and asking for more power, including this data center. However, as I've said before, this data center, I think it's a square peg for a square hole. It's a good fit. It uses an existing service that was already there and able for the previous owner to use as much of that power as they wanted. The case is still the same. This is a customer, and they will be using that power. If they want more, they can come to the utility. We'll talk about it. But there's going to be a lot of due diligence to make sure that whatever their proposal is does fit in with our ability to deliver that power. And that does consider all of our other customers. We don't want to agree to anything that's a detriment to other customers of Power and Light. And GreenSpark doesn't want that either. They don't want to be a detriment. They want to be a positive impact to the community, not a negative one. Are there other data centers in Alaska? Yes, very little information. Most of them are private. I don't have any information on size. Cordova does have a very small one, 170 kilowatts, but they're hoping to expand with the GreenSpark up to a 1.5 megawatt facility, very close to what we are planning, or they are planning, in Petersburg. And of note, Anchorage has an ordinance that regulates data centers above 20 megawatts. And so that's in itself a very large, in my opinion, it's a very large data center, and something that would never be supported in Petersburg. There's questions about the Rangel data center and what became of that project, how it compares to Petersburg's. Petersburg's project, the main difference is Petersburg project is 100% private. It's a private property owner who owns the transformer, and it's a private data center company that's coming in to lease property from them and set up their facility. Rangel's project was part of a greater economic development project, in which part of that work was going to be funded by the city and borough of Rangel. And so it is greatly different in that way, in that the community of Rangel really needed to get on board and support that project for it to happen. That is not the case in Petersburg, being this is a private sector project. Power and Light has no expenses related to setting up this data center. It's a pre-existing service, as I said, and it's really, we're just looking at it as another customer. You know, they apply, we'll go put a meter in and start billing them when they're ready for that. Wrangell's project required some additional infrastructure to be built. They are kind of limited by their main SEPA substation in Wrangell, so that would need to be upgraded. The distribution line from the substation to the site needed to be upgraded, and on-site transformers didn't exist. So there's a lot more infrastructure in Wrangell to consider. I'm saying all this not knowing exactly where that project is in Wrangell, what's happening with it, but just trying to point out the differences. As stated, Mazzella, Alaska owns the 2-megawatt transformer. He would like to use that transformer. I mean, when he bought the property, he expected to be able to use that to develop some business down there. And, you know, I don't see that Power and Light can tell him no, since we approved that transformer many, many years ago to be used for a customer. Can an ordinance be written to limit the private sector data center's future growth? Yes, of course, any ordinance can be written. And I think it's probably a good idea to start on that. One of the member of the public talked about ordinances earlier and wanting to know the timeline on those. I think it's a good idea. It would be great to protect the community from large data centers that come in, but you have to realize that we only have so much power, and everybody's keyed on that quite a bit. We can't sell more than we have. This project falls into the amount of power that we have, and factoring in some of the system improvements from SEPA and ourselves, you know, we're in good shape. I would just say that when the ordinance is drafted for future data center opportunities, that we be open to the fact that they may, it may come to a point where data centers are so interested in setting up shop that they could come in and help develop another hydroelectric source that could benefit Petersburg and SEPA in the long term. You know, that's all kind of pie in the sky right now, but it could happen, and that would be a situation where we wouldn't want to get in the way of that necessarily. It may help us quite a bit, but we have to be very careful when we're evaluating those types of projects to make sure that we don't have an issue. Let's see. Storage battery questions. The issue of fire protection came up last time. We did find out that the batteries that are going to be proposed are a safer type of battery, lithium iron phosphate batteries, not lithium ion. These batteries are magnitudes safer than the alternative. They're not 100% safe, I would say, but the industry has taken that into account. They're all self-contained. They have their own fire suppression systems. They're monitored and controlled very well. So the potential for a fire event is much lessened by all those engineering controls. And the types of batteries that they are, they basically just, if they do have a thermal event, they need to be cooled, and water can be used to do that cooling. Petersburg Volunteer Fire Department can respond to this take care of business if it were to come to that. Let's see. There was a question about why would somebody come to Petersburg? Don't we have high electric rates? Why would somebody do that to themselves? Well, and it turns out Petersburg is actually one of the lowest electric rate electric providers in the state of Alaska. It's kind of hard to say apples to apples because of the fact that, you know, rate structures, you know, change that up a little bit. But if we're not in the bottom two, we're in the bottom three. There's not too many other utilities in the state that have lower power rates than Petersburg. Can the borough guarantee local electric rates won't go up because of the data center? And this is the tricky question, and you're going to think I'm doing double speak here, but yes, we can say that the data center will not cause our rates to go up. They will actually help rates to stabilize and lessen future increases. That does not mean that rates still won't go up for other reasons. Inflation has been high, and those fixed costs will still impact the utility. You know, it would take a tremendous amount of revenue from a customer like this to offset those inflationary cost increases. So rates likely still to go up, but hopefully the discussion with Waterworth today showed that, you know, the more revenue that we gain from a customer like this, the better the rates will be for all of our customers. And that's a main reason that Power and Light is supportive of this project. And along those lines, you know, how can one customer make a difference? Everyone else's rates, it comes down to volume of sales. You know, as I said last time, we have a finite number of customers, whatever our expenses are, including capital projects, future debt service, that kind of thing. We have to lean on that same amount of customers. Well, this one customer equals, you know, several hundred normal residential customers. So that helps a dramatic amount in our outlook on rates. Questions about the large commercial sales agreement and how it will be structured. And, you know, we haven't gotten down the road too far on that. We've shared concepts with Mr. Anoka. They seem very open to a couple different ways to look at that. And mostly I'm talking about the times in the wintertime when we have cold temperatures and we do have to run diesel to peak shave and make sure the lights stay on. Mr. Anoka has said that he'd be happy to, he doesn't have to have the data center up, you know, 24/7, 365. There's a number of days that he can curtail his service in order to fit better with the existing customers, basically not to be a burden as far as diesel generation goes. And the other option there, of course, is if it's more valuable to him to have power and not shut down his servers, that GreenSpark would pick up more of the diesel surcharge so that it really doesn't affect either one of those scenarios. It won't affect the other customers that we have right now. Let's see. Oh, why isn't the borough moving this to an area that is closer to the SEPA transmission line, closer to high voltage, basically? The answer is pretty short. It's a private project. It's Mr. Mazzella and GreenSpark are in discussion, you know, for Mr. Mazzella's property, and that's where it's going to go. It's not a decision, you know, for the borough to make to provide an alternate location. Why isn't subject property being used for seafood processing like it used to be? Well, I'm sure a lot of us would have preferred that it had been. It was for sale for quite a while with no takers. The existing owner also processes seafood. They sold it with a 10-year non-compete clause that Mr. Mazzella must abide by. And so, you know, there are some factors, you know, out of our control, out of the community's control, and ultimately those decisions are up to the property owner and the data center company. Questions about the processing plant. How much power did Ocean Beauty use when they were in full operation? I provided some information, and knowing that processing plants are seasonal in the summertime, in 2014 and 2015, Ocean Beauty was going full bore and using about 1 million kilowatt hours in the summertime over about 3 months. In comparison, if GreenSpark, when they put in their first buildup of 1 megawatt, they'll use 8.5 million kilowatt hours in a year, roughly estimated. And at full capacity at 2 megawatts, that turns into 17 million kilowatt hours. It is a dramatic uptick. Same service, same infrastructure, no money spent on that. It is just taking advantage of what is already at the site. And there was a last question about doesn't the borough have an ordinance that requires waterfront property to be marine services based? And the answer is yes, but that only applies to borough-owned property. So the leased property that the borough owns in certain zones must be marine-related. That being said, Mr. Mazzella is very interested, as you saw earlier, in using his property for marine-based economies, and so he's continued to work on that, and hopefully that'll pan out. Overall, you know, that site is historically significant to Petersburg as a processor. Doesn't look like that's going to work out going forward. But as far as marine services, Mr. Mazzella is trying hard to make that a reality again. And I just wanted that, you know, back to the sound, we did include an infographic, you know, on the sound issue. Kind of, you know, it's one thing to say 60 decibels, but it's another thing to understand what that really is. And so with a vacuum cleaner being 70 decibels and normal conversation being 50, a small scale data center like this falls in the middle at 60 and is, in my opinion, pretty easily dealt with on any normal day. That's what I have, and I'll entertain any questions.
Does Mr. Noka or Mr. Mazzella have anything to add to what Carl said?
Go ahead, Sam, if you'd like, or I could say a couple
yes,
things.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I think we saw on the rate charts the injection of money into the system, any money, much less a couple million dollars a year. There's really no downside to that from a business. Again, the borough being a business, there's really no downside. And I would present forward that you need that. You need the money. You're going to have big problems if you don't. You look at the cash reserves, they're going to be gone. You're going to have to borrow money. That's what debt service is. And this allows you to cover existing and potentially future debt service. But hopefully that was pretty clear. I just wanted to point that out. Another thing too, I think maybe people probably just aren't aware, is that all my properties, not just this one, but I have several in Petersburg, various companies and different things. I pay about $5,000 a month today already just for electric and utilities. So, you know, we're already paying, like I said, $5,000 a month. Last year I paid about $100,000 to the city, to the borough for utilities and property taxes. And so we're already there. We already have we're contributing a pretty significant amount. And, the reason I say that is we have to have tenants. We have to have things in order to pay that cost, because otherwise, again, last year I have 100,000 going out and not all that coming in. And so again, with GreenSpark, Carl's done a great job going over the pros and what are perceived cons, which I don't see any realistic cons whatsoever. And you know, I guess on the note of perceived cons, you know, this is the cleanest. This would be one of the cleanest data centers in the entire world. And that's without exaggeration. The reason is this is hydropower, zero emissions. And I don't really know what else to say other than that, but this is about as clean. It is the cleanest you could possibly do, being all hydropower, battery backup. And then I guess to the batteries, you know, I'm very interested in doing business with Tesla. I already do some business with Tesla, and they make these batteries that are just like everything they do. really at the cutting edge of things. All the fire suppression, things like that on these batteries is completely self-contained. There's, you know, I work very closely. I'm happy to work very closely with the fire department, provide them the information. It's, you know, a couple pages, very straightforward, not a lot to absorb on what to do in the event of a fire. But again, this is the cutting edge of technology. And for what it's worth, people may not look at it this way, but if you're a business person, this is the fact of the matter is, these are tens of millions of dollars of equipment. The batteries are $2 million each. And there's no one more than me that doesn't want batteries burning when I put, you know, or Sam, for example, however the deal is made. But, you know, we don't want a fire. We don't want things burning. And I have more of an invested, you know, capital interest in that than anyone else. But like I said, we do have resources and things like that we would certainly share with the fire department and really anyone that wants to know more about it. So,
thank you, Mr. Mazzella. Mr. Noga, anything to add?
Sure. It was encouraging to hear the discussion today. I was following along with Waterworth as best I could. And, you know, I'm glad that you guys are, you know, tracking kind of utility costs and, you know, and future rate increases based on other capital projects and improvements that your system needs. This is kind of the ideal environment and situation for GreenSpark to step into. This is what we look for. We look for communities where, one, there's stranded energy available so that there, you know, there is no, you know, necessary investment required on the utility or by the community for us to come in. That's kind of a key distinguishing, you know, part of our work wherever we go is that, you know, we want to be completely beneficial to the system that we're plugging into. So, you know, that's one of the reasons why, Petersburg is really an interesting and an opportunity for GreenSpark to step into and partner with. So there was another, you know, so all of the rates, you know, will go up based on various factors and other improvements that you're making on your system. And the opportunity, I think, as Carl pointed out, to bring in a large commercial load like GreenSpark, large for your community, not large in the grand scheme of, you know, data centers around the world, but you know, our load and the revenue that we bring to the utility helps offset those costs and put some downward pressure on those future rate increases. And also, I heard a question at the very beginning about, you know, the a new SEPA turbine expansion. And I think that's been proposed, although, you know, Carl could speak more, you know, to that in the future of the SEPA system. But this is the kind of load that if we can bring this to Petersburg and Wrangell and maybe even Ketchikan, this is the kind of load that allows the entire system to expand, which would drive out, you know, more diesel emissions from the system and drive down rates for not just your community, but the other communities that are part of the SEPA system. So we definitely, if it was the case that, you know, we came into a community and there was real contention about how much energy we needed versus what you already need to serve, you know, your town and community, we wouldn't have advanced this discussion to this level because it's really, you know, it's really part of our core value set that wherever we go, you know, we want to be a win for the utility, a win for the entire community. And it needs to, you know, it needs to square with our business plan. And if it doesn't do those three things, then it, you know, we really shouldn't be considering, you know, going into communities that just don't, you know, that don't match those values for us. So at the end of the day, I'm thankful that Andrew reached out to us and that we've engaged, you know, Carl and Steve at the utility to kind of talk through the issues and you know, answered a few questions to local reporter Olivia. So, you know, So far, so good. You know, we're excited about the opportunity, and you know, we love to be we'd love to be a step forward into the future for Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Noga.
If I may add one thing, and Carl, this is for Carl, but I wanted to point out, since Sam just reminded me, the question at the beginning, I think it was maybe one of the last public statements, but about the third turbine and the capacity and things like that. I appreciate all questions and you know, great people are asking things. I think there was a little bit of a misunderstanding with the premise for that question. Again, if Carl could expound upon this, but the third turbine is new service. Like that's not already spoken for. In fact, as we know from the previous presentations, the current two turbine capacity is not spoken for, and a lot of power is just being wasted by the water spilling over the dam. So I just wanted to point out, thank you for all the questions, maybe some clarification on that if you think so, Carl.
Mr. Mayor, I can talk about that. So SEPA does have a project to add a third turbine at Tyee Lake. It will raise their total output to about 36 megawatts from that facility. Portion of that, because Tyee Lake is dedicated to Petersburg and Wrangell on the north end of SEPA system, Petersburg will obviously benefit from that. By no means is the power from that third turbine spoken for or maxed out yet. It allows for planning to occur, you know, and for SEPA and for the community, the member communities of the agency. That turbine won't be spinning all year round. You know, that turbine is really more geared towards horsepower, not power, meaning that in the wintertime when the two older turbines are maxed out, this one will spin up and provide, you know, the more horsepower to get through those peaks so that, you know, we don't have any diesel generation going on at all. And that, from our calculations, shows to be in many years in the future of no diesel runs, you know, due to winter peak shaving. So it's going to be a very beneficial project. Again, that's a SEPA project, and they are planning to complete that in calendar year 2027.
Questions? Member Valentine?
Thank you. This is a lot of information. I have a couple different questions, so I'm going to do my best to try to speed through this. Carl, since you're here, and then I would like to ask Mr. Anoka a question as well. Can you tell me the average, like, residential consumption of a house? Like, how much, you know, we're just in general?
It's pretty variable, but anywhere from 800 kilowatt hours to 1,500 would be kind of a low range.
Okay. Let's put it at 1,000.
All electric, you know,
okay.
Higher than that.
So 1,000 kilowatts, so that would be 10 homes to equal 1 megawatt, if I'm doing my math correctly.
No, we're talking about energy use. So kilowatt hours, it's when we talk about power generation, we talk about kilowatts or megawatts.
Mm-hmm.
Energy use, we talk about kilowatt hours or megawatt
right.
hours.
Right, okay. I'm just trying to make the math simple so people can, like, look and see how many houses compared to this 2 megawatt transformer, right? So I'm just trying to find a nice little equation, because we did bring up, like, we would love for Petersburg to expand population. I would love that. I want more of my friends and family to stay here at my age, right? But, you know, the question is, like, we do plan on expanding, like, will we be able to handle the load? Now, that said, our max currently for our electrical use is 13 megawatts for the town.
13.8 has been our peak.
13.8.
And that's in megawatts.
That's in megawatts, yes. And then in the summertime, it averages like 6 to 8.
Right.
Okay. And then only three times in the last 5 years have we touched 3.8?
13.8. We've seen that peak. But twice, we've gotten close to it. You know, okay. Usually in the coldest times of the years, we're going to be right around 13 and a half.
And then if we touch that, that's when diesel turns on?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
Depends on a couple different factors, but generally, yes.
Okay. And then?
And that only happens during the peak times of the day. So
right.
In the morning, yes.
And
in the evening, yes. Middle of the day, no. Middle of the night, no.
Okay. And then the Green Spark is willing to work with us, you know, on good faith. But what ensures that they would, like, turn it off if we told them, hey, turn it off? You know, we're getting to that peak. What ensures that?
Well, we'll
is there
the
any
sales,
insurance?
The sales agreement, the okay. large commercial sales agreement.
A large commercial into. Sales agreement between Power and Light and Green Spark.
Yes.
That is what you guys are doing. Okay.
Yes. Yep.
And also, if they were like, hey, we don't want to shut this down, we want to use diesel, also in that contract says that they will pay for the extra diesel.
Correct.
Themselves.
Yes. The details
not spread out across
curtailment or diesel surcharge will be in that agreement.
Got it. Okay. Thank you. And then last, I did have a question for Mr. Anoka, if you're there.
He's there.
Mr. Anoka?
Yep, I'm here.
Hi. My name is James. I was just curious about your closed loop system for cooling. I have an engineering background. I have an engineering degree, but maybe I might understand it a little bit. So I'm just curious what that closed loop system is. What is the coolant? And then how often would you need to change that? And can our wastewater place handle that? Thank you.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for the question. So I think we're in the process of studying exactly, you know, the temperature ranges, and that will dictate what exactly our coolant needs to be, but it'll be predominantly water. I think there may be something akin to like an antifreeze type agent that's mixed into that water if the coldest of the cold weather temperatures warrant it. But really what we have is kind of a hot loop that runs through our cabinets that takes and rejects the heat from our cabinets. That loop then goes over to a heat exchange where we run a cold loop that runs to either a dry cooler and or a chiller that sits outside. That's effectively the closed loop system. Whereas hyperscale data centers use, you know, evaporative cooling, and that just means they're plowing through millions of gallons of water.
And it boils off, right? If you're saying evaporate, yeah, okay, then it would boil off.
Right. So our choice of design is, is to maximize energy efficiency. But we recognize one of our values is that, you know, the sustainability of this infrastructure, you know, is really key to how this gets deployed, not just in rural Alaska, but globally. And water usage at, you know, for data centers, the hyperscalers in particular, is a real challenge in the lower 48 and around the world. So we made a specific design choice to go, you know, to go with closed loop systems.
And then how often would you have to flush that?
Well, we wouldn't need to flush it. Probably, if anything, we would just kind of maybe need to top it up a little bit just to make sure that it's running, you know, at maximum efficiency through the year. So maybe one trip a year to make sure the levels are up.
Okay, thank you.
Member Newman.
Thank you. So we've established that we have plenty of power, and especially with the third turbine coming online. But the one question I keep hearing from people, and a couple people made comments today, you know, what about on the other end of the spectrum in low water years? And what if we have like 3 years in a row where we have low volume? What happens in that set of circumstances? What's it going to look like?
Sure. So the last meeting I talked about the operational sales band, you know, from Taiyi Lake, that operation would still be in place. So that protects Pierceburg and Wrangell in years where water is low, so that we don't sell excess power to Ketchikan. That's the whole premise of that. That same premise, though, you know, protects us in those years. And trying to think of the right analogy here, but the that operational plan was developed out of that drought from 2018, 2019. That's a very isolated event. It was horrible from the power's perspective, but it was isolated. And since then, we have spilled a dramatic amount of energy. It's like feast or famine, with that 1 year being the famine, and then the feast being every other year of Tyee Lake existence. And so we know it can happen, because it did happen. The operational plan helps to retain more water at lake when the clouds don't open up and provide the water that we expect. But it is very unlikely, with that operational plan in place, that will be dicey. Droughts just don't last that long in Southeast Alaska.
Not generally, but so we have numbers from those 2 years, 18 and 19, and those numbers of power output would still be sufficient to supply power for everybody in our community and also for this data center, or?
I have to get back to you on that.
That's why I'm trying to.
But I believe so. Yeah, I do believe so.
Okay. So if the battery bank wasn't sufficient, you know, for like a long term solution, then we have enough diesel generator capacity to solve that, basically.
Yeah. So the battery that you're talking about is the GreenSpark battery, or?
Is that more like just like a real temporary?
And maybe Sam can add to this, but in my estimation, it's kind of like a uninterruptible power source for your computer. It will activate if we have an outage in town. It will come on and take the load, but then it'll allow those servers to be shut down in a controlled fashion so they're not harmed. It's not really meant to carry that load for days
extended period
at a time. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that our battery is really designed to provide, you know, at most maybe an hour or two of sustained load. It's not intended for us to operate at a long duration. It's really to give us an opportunity to have a managed shutdown if there's an extended outage at the utility level. It also is useful for both conditioning the power on the way in and also kind of insulating our operation from, you know, any sort of shocks that the utility system may have. But it also, you know, it gives us an opportunity to mitigate anything in terms of our ramp rate. In terms of, you know, when we turn on all of our servers, we don't turn them all on at once. If we did, that would be a little bit of a shock to the utility system, but having that battery in between our operation and the utility grid is a cushion between both of our operations. And so as we start cycling up our servers, our incremental load isn't necessarily hitting all at once on Petersburg system or the SEPA system. It's gradually, you know, it's graduated on its way into the system, if that makes sense. So again, this, you know, the battery is really just to mitigate, short-term interruptions, and give us a chance to have an organized shutdown if there is going to be an extended outage.
That's very interesting and good information. It's, I guess I just never really visualized that the SEPA power would be, you know, basically flowing through the battery banks first and then to the data center.
I would just like to add one other kind of interesting fact here is that, you know, we've kind of talked about a data center managing its workload according to what's going on the local grid. And GreenSpark is currently in collaboration with several national laboratories and University of Alaska Fairbanks, which is where I went and got my undergrad degree, and the energy program up there, as well as key commercial stakeholders down here in the United States, the lower 48, like NVIDIA and other of the big AI companies. So the concept of what we're talking about, being grid responsive with our workloads, that is the talk of all of the sector right now, is everybody's really, really, really interested in cracking that problem. And I started GreenSpark 10 years ago to start focusing on this problem. And 10 years ago, it wasn't a big issue. Now it is. The world is paying attention to this very closely. So it's not a leap by any means to say that the work that we'll be embarking on to solve these kinds of issues in partnership with the utility and Cordova Electric and, you know, all the other microgrids around Alaska that we're going to be working with, it's not a stretch at all to say that this is literally the cutting edge of where this industry is today. Everyone in the world is keen on focusing on this. And, you know, it's just, you know, it's a great opportunity for not just Petersburg, but all of Alaska, you know, to have a chance to, you know, really participate in some of this groundbreaking, you know, research and development and technology that the rest of the world desperately needs. So, you know, we're excited to get to work on it, not just in Petersburg, but all over Alaska.
It's all very interesting. Thank you very much.
Other questions for Member Mucci?
Yeah, not so much questions, but I just wanted to thank Carl and Steve and Andrew and Sam. I mean, I asked to have this back on the agenda again because I wanted to make sure that the community had another opportunity to kind of hear this presentation. And during the last 2 weeks, I reached out to several people who had concerns about this, and this is a lot where these questions came from, and they were great questions. And I lay awake at night wondering what I'm missing here. And I'm not kidding. It's just like I'm it keeps me awake at night trying to figure this out. And when I hear a half hour, 45 minute presentation about the rates going up, I'm trying to figure out how I can make those rates a little more affordable. And like Carl said, this seems to be a square peg for a square hole. And I'm supportive of this project. And I just wanted to thank all the borough staff. We spent time on this because I know it was a lot of work, and I appreciate your patience with me. Thank you.
Thank you. I believe Aaron had a question. Okay, got it answered.
Yeah, through the mayor to answer. Okay. Assemblyman Valentine's running some quick numbers. What GreenSpark's going to use is, and it's really hard because every house is different, between 200 and 500 houses worth. And if you take that same math and look at how much we'll have left after GreenSpark, that still gives us anywhere from 800 to 1,500 houses that we could build. So I don't think that's going to happen any day soon.
Okay, thank you. Well, let's hope so. Population boom, that's what I want. So anyways, thanks.
All right. With that, I'm going to move on to the last item on the report of other officers.
Mr. Mayor,
sorry. Go ahead.
I know we're running late. I just have one question maybe for Steve. But so there's some skepticism and distrust out there. What if the noise is a lot more than what ability does a borough have to enforce any kind of noise in, limit?
Through the mayor, as you've heard, there'll be a sales contract between the borough and GreenSpark. And those are the kind of things that show up in a contract. So what are the repercussions if it becomes too loud? So I can't answer it right this second, but that's where you would generally put it, would be in the agreement we have with GreenSpark to sell them power.
Yeah, other questions?
If I may on that too, just keeping in mind it's anywhere we would be putting this is an industrial zoned property, just to make sure everyone's aware, it's the industrial zone, and with that, you know, has its own code. Well, of course, the code for industrial. So, just keeping in mind with that.
Correct.
Thank you. Carl?
One last comment, just to mention to everyone that the initial presentation from last meeting and the frequently asked questions that we talked about today are all on our website. Just go to the Petersburg Borough website and to the Power and Light page, and all the information is there.
Thank you. With that, I'm going to move to the next part here. I chaired a special SEPA meeting last week, and from that meeting, we have now things a few things I think can go public. And with that, Carl, if you'd like to make a presentation.
Yeah. Sure. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So some exciting things happening on the SEPA level. The board approved a land lease agreement between SEPA and the City of Borough of Wrangell. The lease is a critical milestone in a process that included alternative energy study, project site selection, land procurements by the Wrangell Municipality, and approval of the agency's first project outside of hydropower. This project will be built by SEPA on City and Borough Wrangell land, and will contain a 5-megawatt battery energy storage system called a BESS, and a solar farm. The solar panels will initially be built to a capacity of 1.5 megawatts, but will be fully built out to a 5-megawatt facility sometime in the future. This project also provides Wrangell with its first power generation facility outside of its diesel generation fleet, and will have a positive impact to the north end of the SEPA system, which Petersburg is a part of, by injecting battery power during system faults and other disturbances, thereby reducing occurrences of outages. So it is really a reliability and stability project overall. The board also approved a contract with Commonwealth Associates to advance design on the Wrangell Solar BESS project to construction-ready documents for a summer 2026 start. So yeah, that is this summer. They're gonna start on that project. The board also approved a new 5+ year contract with current SEPA CEO, Robert Seidman. Mr. Seidman's knowledge, experience, initiative, and personal energy have made him an outstanding asset to the agency, and the board is pleased to approve this longer-term contract. The CEO is now secured in a contract to lead the agency through FERC relicensing for both Swan and Tyee Lakes, which is an enormous process, Tyee Third Turbine Project, and the Ketchikan Substation Project. Of course, also the Wrangell project we just talked about. And lastly, the board approved a change order with McMillan Design Engineer on the Tyee Lake Third Turbine Project to cover a larger than anticipated effort to coordinate and manage the equipment supply contract. The additional work performed by the engineering firm was made necessary by the project being split into an equipment procurement phase and a construction phase. But it was critical to ensure that the construction phase proceeds smoothly once the equipment that's being built right now is delivered to the remote site out at Tyee Lake. Projects are still on schedule to be completed in 2027.
Questions? Member Mucci?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, thank you for that. I had a question about the solar farm. Is there a plan for a solar farm here on Midcoff Island?
There is not at the present time. The effort that SEPA went through to identify what's the right amount of solar for the system landed on one project, and that one, the site was better in Wrangell, so they went in that direction.
And a follow-up question, that how big is a solar farm that would generate 5 megawatt? How big of an acreage is that? Like,
I want to say it's about 40 acres.
Okay.
40 That's acres. Yeah.
Okay. Great. Yep. And then the Wrangell Solar / BESS project construction, is that kind of like a prototype that would help us with our BESS system with Crystal Lake to town?
It could. We definitely be able to see, you know, how that design proceeds and what it looks like in the end. However, every location is going to be slightly different. So we have to do our own due diligence and make sure that if a best project ever does come to Petersburg, located out at Blind Slough, that it meets what we need in that kind of a facility.
Great, thank you very much.
Okay. Carl, can I add two other parts to that? We looked at solar throughout Wrangell, Petersburg, and Ketchikan. The best site of all communities was in Wrangell. we had a chance, and this is the very last chance, we're within days of the deadline to get a grant to pay for that. And so that essentially doesn't cost the repairs anything other than to build it. And Wrangell gave SEPA the land for that for $1 a year. So really, this, the first part of this really does not have a much of a cost at all to the ratepayers. I would add that. And then the second part of that was, I want to address the question that keeps coming up about water in that reservoir. Is that I was on the board in 2018 when this all happened, and I can assure you it was ugly at the time. But we've gone through all kinds of scenarios of looking at, is there sufficient water to take care of that third turbine and take care of Wrangell and Petersburg? The answer is, yeah, and we've done that in three different ways. The first is that we established a guide curve. And what that does, when that reservoir starts going down to a certain point, you shut off water, selling the water to other entities other than the two communities. In other words, it can't go to Ketchikan. The second thing is we go through a process each year of establishing an action plan, essentially. It's what Carl works with almost every day, but we're talking about how we're going to manage that reservoir or those reservoirs for the whole year. And then and almost on a daily basis, and Carl on the third part, Carl and the crew weekly look at that and see how that needs to be adjusted. So there's, in my mind, there's three different ways that we've looked at that, and I think I won't say it's totally fail-safe, but I think it's a pretty doggone good system that we put into place. And we've looked at it, last year, I believe, is what it was, whether or not we were doing it correctly, and came back to the same conclusion that what we had in place was adequate.
Yeah, I would concur, Mr. Mayor. SEPA communicates a lot on operations planning, and they come up with a plan, you know, at the beginning of each year. They follow that plan, and they're not afraid to adjust it if something comes up. And the weekly operations meeting that we have with SEPA, we go over how the plan is doing every week. So there's a lot of communication involved, and a lot of communication that the public isn't aware of. But it's important, and I'm glad that SEPA is operating that way, and it's all at our benefit.
I would just add one other thing, too, is that the board has concentrated for the last 3 years on reliability and stability and improving that grid as much as possible to keep outages to a minimum and to keep that system moving forward. And the projects that Carl's talked about are in the process. There's one, and there's another big one in Ketchikan. There's that one in Wrangell that we're going in addition to this, in addition to the reservoir. And we've looked ahead at other hydro projects. And if somebody else wanted to come in and build a hydro for a big mega farm of some sort, you know, we have the resources, the hydro resources, we have the water rights. We could build one, but you're talking, to do that, you're talking $100 million to build that facility. And it would take about 5 years. But everything's there. We've done the studies. We've got everything prepared if that needs to be done.
Nothing further to add.
Okay. And that's all I have. And with that, unless you have anything else, Carl, let's take a 5-minute break and come back.